finishing up starting pitchers. We're almost done with our position previews. This is awesome. It's March 3rd, right? Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, it's exciting.
I know. And I know this is the time. I went back and I looked just through our inbox last year at when we started getting, you know, flooded with emails. We've had a lot of emails, but not exactly flooded. And it's really like next week, I think. I think everybody's going to really start getting into fantasy baseball now. And next week will be extremely exciting. So go back, listen to all the position previews, get caught up if you haven't done so already. Part two of starting pitchers right now. I am Adam Azer, at Adam Azer on Twitter, A-I-Z-E-R. Scott White, good morning.
Good morning, sir.
And you are writing up sort of, you know, like a morning roundup, what happened in spring training, right? You're going to start doing
yes,
that?
Yes, yes. It won't be every morning, but periodically throughout spring training. Probably more days than not. I'll check in with some of what's happening and obviously reducing it to what I think could actually make an impact in fantasy, not really going to talk about Mike Trout's 3-for-3 performance. No, Malik Smith's historic performance yesterday, he would have hit for a cycle, except he hit a second triple instead of a single. That's how good of a game he had. I think that does matter in fantasy, deeper leagues. It improves his chances of getting an early call-up, or maybe even breaking camp with the team, because I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility they could just shift Hector Olivera back to third base and start Malik Smith in left. So, yeah, I think that performance is absolutely one that fantasy owners should be aware of.
Oh, Heath, what a homer spring training column.
Yeah, I think it's good. I mean, the Braves reports.
All right, well, Scott is at CBS Scott White. Heath is Heath Cummings Sr. SR, and Al Melchior at Al Melk CBS at Al M-E-L-C CBS. Good morning, Al.
Good morning. Yep, I'm here.
And good morning to Heath, too. I didn't want you to think I didn't wish you a good morning, Heath.
Good afternoon.
Yes, there we go. So, listen, we did a lot yesterday. We talked starting pitchers. I think everybody wants to hear more about Taiwan Walker, I'm sure. So we'll get to him. But it's all we're going to do today is go through ADP and average draft position, that is, on fantasypros.com. Now, this is rotisserie. So in head-to-head points leagues, starting pitchers tend to go earlier. We think they tend to go too early, but that's a topic for another show. So let's just look at who's grouped together based on average draft position and what you guys think about it. Here we go. Clayton Kershaw in a league of his own, fourth overall. And then Max Scherzer, 13th overall. Jake Arrieta, 19th. And finishing out round two, Chris Sale and Madison Bumgarner. So your top five, Kershaw. And then everybody else in round two, Scherzer, Arrieta, Chris Sale, Madison Bumgarner. Your thoughts, guys?
Well, I've got Bumgarner ahead of Arrieta, but that was a really tough decision for me, and you know, it's a razor-thin margin between the two. And basically, it just comes down to age as a tiebreaker, because Arrieta had kicked around for a while before having his breakout a couple years ago. And so Bumgarner is considerably younger. And I could see him taking a step up. And I think Arrieta, I said to Heath the other day, Arrieta's sort of like Greinke Jr. We know how Heath feels about Greinke. And I don't see Arrieta BABIPing it to the same degree this season as he did last year.
Yeah, but I mean, come on. How much better was Arrieta's ERA than Bumgarner's last year? There's some room for him to obviously regress and still be awesome. I don't think we should look at Jake Arrieta as just the 1 year that was awesome. It was basically a 2 year stretch. It wasn't a full season in 2014, but he, I think, led all starters in FIP in 2014 because he's so good at keeping the ball in the park in addition to the strikeout rate. Which isn't to say Bumgarner couldn't overtake him. I think I'd still take Arrieta over Bumgarner, though those are also my 3 and 4.
So, quick question. You guys can give a quick yes or no. Any concerns at all about Jake Arrieta's innings? He threw 248 and two-thirds, including the playoffs, coming off of 176 and two-thirds the year before. Any concern about Arrieta's innings?
No more than we should have been concerned about Madison Bumgarner last year.
Right.
After what was it, 280-some innings in 2014, and he was just fine.
Okay. And Chris Sale, you know, Heath and I, we talked about this. He has never finished better than 10th. And his ERA is usually in the, like, really low threes, which is really good, but it's not elite. So does Chris Sale, is that justified to make him the fourth best pitcher, fourth, the, you know, ADP number four at starting pitcher, Heath?
See, I feel like he actually took another step forward last year. His strikeout rate was unbelievable. And maybe he's just going to be a guy whose ERA is above his FIP, but he had a 2.73 FIP last year, basically the same as your boy Jacob DeGrom. And he strikes out a lot more better. So if the White Sox are better, which I think they'll be a little better than they were last year, I would expect he's going to win more games. And I would expect his ERA is going to be better. I absolutely think he belongs there.
I think I'm the low guy on Sale. And my reasoning isn't because I think he's less dominant than pitcher X. It's because he's never thrown even 215 innings in a season, much less the 220 most of these pitchers are getting. And only twice has he ever thrown 200 innings.
Does that matter as much to you and Roto?
Yeah, because obviously more innings of low ratios means lower ratios for your team as a whole.
But it's not as important as it is in points.
Not as important, sure.
By the way, Scott, you've got Sale ranked 7th. I think these are points rankings I'm looking at. I've got him 8th.
All right. I'm not the low guy.
You are not.
Is it the same reason or is it something else?
No, it's the same reason.
Okay.
But listen, like as we spoke about yesterday, it's kind of like Dior's choice with a lot of these guys, right? I mean, they're all great and, you know.
It's the same tier.
Okay.
I wouldn't reach for one of them if I felt like I had a shot at getting another with my next pick.
Right. Okay, so with that said, let's go to the five guys who are going in round 3 in 12-team leagues, according to Fantasy Pros ADP. And those would be David Price, Zach Greinke, Jacob DeGrom, Matt Harvey, and Garrett Cole. David Price, Zach Greinke, Jacob DeGrom, Matt Harvey, and Garrett Cole. Does anyone not belong in that group?
I don't think Greinke does.
I've got Greinke in that group. I mean, my issue isn't really with who's in that group. It's who's not.
And it's Kluber?
It's Kluber and Strasburg, who I have above
everyone
in that group.
Are you saying Kluber and Strasburg should be drafted in the third round as well as all those other guys should be drafted in the third round?
Well, there's hardly enough picks.
Right.
To make that happen.
So who shouldn't be in the third round?
Well, can I jump in here? Because maybe I should have extended it 2 more picks. To Jose Fernandez and Corey Kluber, because they're going really early in the fourth round. They're pretty much right there with the Harvey Cole group. So Price, Greinke, DeGrom.
If somebody's got to give, for me, it would be Garrett Cole.
Oh, why? Garrett Cole's so good, man. I kept thinking about this. He really did everything. I mean, I think he was the number 8 starting pitcher last year. 1.09 whip, 260 ERA, 202 strikeouts. Why Garrett Cole?
Well, for one reason, he's all ticked off now, but
no, yeah, he wants more money. He's pumped up.
It's, we've talked about this, and it's just the margins between the guys that we have and, the upper part of our top 20 and the lower part, there's a distinct tier there somewhere, but within those, I guess, mini tiers, it's hard to distinguish. And just Cole just isn't quite as dominant a strikeout pitcher as some of the other pitchers in that group. And I guess that's really about it, because it's really hard to distinguish him from
Thing for me when I'm looking at Kluber against Cole, Cole was a lot better last year. But I think it's much more likely that Kluber repeats his 10 strikeouts per 9 than Cole repeats his 19 wins. And Kluber was also pretty unlucky last year.
Oh, he was extremely unlucky.
I mean, in terms of ERA, not just
right. Wins. I mean, in several different ways.
He throws more innings, he strikes out more batters, and he has a similar FIP. I would expect he's going to be better than Cole this year.
Why was he so unlucky at Corey Kluber if he actually had a lower BABIP? In fact, last year, 2015 was his lowest BABIP season of his career. He had a lower BABIP in 2015 than 2014. So tell me why.
I think some of it had to do with sequencing, strand rate. And then did he give up more home runs last year than he had in the past?
I'm looking that up right now because that's my recollection. Well, he certainly gave up a lot more than he did in 2014.
He gave up more fly balls. His ground ball to fly ball ratio dropped from 0.96 to 0.75.
Yeah, the fly ball ratio did increase quite a bit.
Like, here's the thing with Kluber. I mean, he was so good and certainly passes the eye test. He was so good in 2014. He was your number 4 starting pitcher. But he and Strasburg, they don't really have, the track record of being an ace, except for 1 year for Kluber. So is it
last year Kluber was an ace. He just didn't have the wins to put him up where he belonged in the points total. He wasn't as good as 2 years ago.
But what about the ERA?
You factor in everything.
Yeah.
Including the strikeout rate in the innings, he was a fantasy ace.
Well, no, because he was the 18th best pitcher in points, 15th in roto. He had a
3.9 because of wins.
But he also had a
win-loss record.
9-16.
That's terrible.
He had a 3.49 ERA though.
That's when you consider the innings and the strikeouts, you'll take the 3.49 ERA. If that's what it ends up being again.
Yeah, and Heath pointed out the strand rate, which was low for him. So.
Okay.
You got to expect that to improve. He probably won't give up as many homers this year either.
If he has a 3.49 ERA, he's going to struggle with wins and losses, don't you think?
Well, not if but I don't believe he's going to have a 3.49 ERA.
Yeah, there's that. But I ultimately think it's irrelevant. If you're going 7-8 innings consistently and only allowing 3 runs more often than not, you're going to win more often than not.
Okay.
I'd expect he's going to have closer to a 3.2 than a 3.5. He's still going to strike out close to 10 batters per nine. He's probably going to win 15-plus games.
All right, so Jose Fernandez is interesting. Heath, you wrote a story about this. We talked about it a couple weeks ago. Can Jose Fernandez be your ace? He is the 11th pitcher off the board going early.
I think his average draft position has actually fallen a little bit since I wrote that.
Oh, he's so influential.
Yeah, I don't think it had anything to do with me.
Well, what do you guys think? Can Jose Fernandez be your ace given his innings limit?
My take then was he can be your ace if you get him as the 11th or 12th pitcher off the board in the fourth round.
Okay.
I'm not going to take him in the third round ahead of guys like Harvey, Cole, Kluber, DeGrom.
Yeah, okay. And I'd want to turn right around and pair him with another ace if he was my first pitcher selected. But I think I said on yesterday's podcast he's probably the second most talented pitcher in baseball, and I do believe that. It's just you're putting a little too much faith in his durability and, obviously the fact that innings are going to be limited if you make him your one and only number one.
Okay, so then the next group of starting pitchers is a little bit more interesting after Fernandez and Kluber. That's 12 deep. So 13 through 16, and these guys are going fourth, maybe early fifth round. Dallas Keuchel, Steven Strasburg, Felix Hernandez, and Chris Archer. Dallas Keuchel, Steven Strasburg, Felix Hernandez, Chris Archer. What do you guys think?
Well, this is definitely where I think there's a break in tiers, and then you start a new group of 10 to a dozen or so pitchers who are very hard to distinguish from each other value-wise. But the outlier for me here is Strasburg, just because what he did late last season, once he was healthy, was really on another level. It's really the Strasburg. It's sort of analogous to what happened with Bryce Harper. He hit that level that we had been waiting for him to hit for some time, and it's easy for me to buy into that as something that he can come close to again this year. And so that puts him up in the first tier for me.
I think my concern with Strasburg specifically is kind of what I was saying about Chris Sale, except to an even higher degree. I mean, there have been the reason Strasburg's breakthrough isn't getting as much credit as Harper's is because he pitched half the season.
Yeah.
20 starts, I think he made. Was that it? Something like that. And that's not like, obviously not his first bout with injuries in his brief career. So, It's kind of what I was saying about Jose Fernandez. Like, I wouldn't want to put too much faith in him knowing the durability issues. I'd rather him be my number two and hope he stays healthy and performs more like a number one.
And the nice thing about where he's going is you can draft him as your number two.
Yeah.
You can take him in the fourth or fifth round, whereas you have to spend a third rounder in most leagues on Fernandez. I have all of these guys except for Archer ahead of Greinke in my rankings. This tier is where I think Greinke belongs.
Yeah. Okay. Just to want to give some numbers on Strasburg. You talked about the breakout. He was so good. Last 13 starts, he had a 1.76 ERA, struck out 100 batters in 82 innings. And the last 5 starts, just ridiculous. 57 strikeouts and 36 and a third innings, 4 straight games with double digit Ks. So we know the potential's there for Strasburg. Now, as I look at these pitchers, guys, Keuchel, Strasburg, Felix Hernandez, Chris Archer, and then you go further to the next group of Syndergaard, Carrasco, Sonny Gray, I'm just, I cannot see myself drafting Felix Hernandez this year. I look at 2014 when he had the 2.14 ERA as the outlier season. And really last year, 353, but the two previous years, 2012 and 2013, before the great 2014 season, he had a 306 and a 304 ERA. So I don't know. I'm staying away from Felix Hernandez.
I didn't follow your reasoning.
Yeah, because I'm not going to say, well, he had a 214 ERA in 2014 when he was the number two pitcher in points, number three in Roto, because I think that was as much of an outlier as last year was. So I think he's in between that, but with downside. Because he's,
but what's wrong with a low 3 ERA, I think, is what he...
Yeah, yeah.
I'm saying if he strikes out a batter per inning and has a 3.05 ERA, you're thrilled with him as your 14th or 15th pitcher off the board.
Because I don't know if he's going to strike out a batter per inning. You know, throughout his career, he's usually been around 8.5, which is what
the last four is 8.6, 9.5, 9.4, 8.5.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be right around a batter per inning.
He's been, yeah, kind of hovering around the 9.0, which is, you know, it's normal for a pitcher to have that amount of variation.
So, and listen.
The median is right a strikeout per inning.
All right, so let me just finish on Felix Hernandez. Because I didn't want to draft him last year, and I haven't really drafted him at all, because I see a guy who appears to have diminished velocity, and he's been able to pitch through it, and good for him. But this is just a guy who's at the point in his career, 8 straight seasons with 200 or more innings pitched, more than 230 in 4 straight seasons at one point in that stretch. I just feel like a candidate to have a really bad season out of nowhere, and maybe last year was the beginning of that. So that is why I feel like I will take safer options instead of Felix Hernandez.
Who's the safer option in this range?
Oh, everyone we mentioned. I think Carlos Carrasco is safer with more upside. I think Archer is safer. I think Sonny Gray is safer. I think John Lester is safer.
How early were we drafting Felix Hernandez last year, though?
Quite early.
Third round?
Well, I'm not talking about rounds, but among starting pitchers.
Top 10 somewhere.
Top 5.
I think top 5. He may have even been number 2 for me. And now we're getting him outside the top 15, potentially. I mean, that, I think, is enough of a downgrade that, you know, passing him up, and rather than passing him up entirely, I'm excited about drafting him at that point. Especially since he'll probably be my second starting pitcher then.
Yeah, I think, yes. Adam, it sounds almost like you're sort of doing with Felix what I was describing that I do with Clayton Kershaw yesterday, where it's like you're just kind of waiting for, you know, the hammer to fall,
yeah.
Even though there's no evidence of it. Because you mentioned the velocity. I mean, his velocity has been pretty steady over the last 4 years. And, okay, the last two seasons have been kind of slight outliers in two different directions, but the two seasons before that, those were those, you know, 3.0 ERA seasons with, mm-hmm. You know, roughly a strikeout per inning and good control and not a high slugging.
I'm willing to be wrong on Felix, and I will say this. I would consider drafting him, as Scott mentioned, as my number two starting pitcher, but I will not make him my number one starting pitcher.
Well, you don't have to.
Yeah.
I don't have to, but there's a good chance. But look, there's a good chance that I might not take my number one starting pitcher until this range. Like, I might wait until rounds 4 and 5 to take Strasburg or let's say Archer and Carrasco as my first two pitchers and go hitter, hitter, hitter with my first three. But I will not be going hitter, hitter, hitter Felix Hernandez.
I will say I do not agree with the premise. I agree completely with the premise that Carrasco and Archer may have more upside than Felix. I do not agree with either one of them being safer.
I will say that I could see Felix Hernandez being a guy that I am sort of on an island with, my opinion. It's a personal thing.
What do you have personally against Felix Hernandez?
I don't know. I don't want a guy
the
who's logged that
the,
many
the
innings.
The blonde hair?
Yeah, the hair. No, he's great. And all right, whatever.
Hooray, I keep on bringing,
let's talk through it. Get through your
I keep
feelings.
Bringing up hair because I talked about DeGrom yesterday.
Yeah.
But did you see the story from sometime yesterday that there are hitters who have admitted that his hair distracted them?
That's like not surprising.
And made him harder to hit.
Is it?
Yeah.
Good for him. Okay. Anyway, next group. We are 16 deep here. Syndergaard, Carrasco, and we are at the end of round 5 going into round 6. Syndergaard, Carrasco, Sonny Gray, John Lester. Syndergaard, Carrasco, Sonny Gray, John Lester.
I don't feel like Sonny Gray belongs here.
I don't either. Especially not in Roto.
You know, just to say, based on the numbers, Sonny Gray does belong there based on where he finished
last year
and the year before. You know, I understand the strikeouts are an issue, but is really that the only issue for Sonny Gray? Because he's pretty damn good otherwise.
He's okay otherwise. You know, I talked about Waka yesterday and thinking he's a bust, and his peripherals, other than the ground ball rate, are Waka-like. Right. And I think Waka got off a little easy last year. Now Gray, in each of his three seasons, has posted a below average BABIP, so maybe he's the new Johnny Cueto, and it's something he just does.
I kind of feel like we should make the distinction, though. There's a difference between posting a below average BABIP and 255. Like, right. even if he's going to be a low BABIP guy, it's probably still going to be 10% higher than it was last year.
Absolutely.
So yeah. His whip's probably going back over 1.15, closer to 1.2.
All right. Yeah, but that's still a good whip. Well, I kind of look at this from the other angle. I don't think it's so much Sonny Gray that doesn't fit. I think it's Carlos Carrasco that doesn't fit. And you could maybe say Noah Syndergaard doesn't fit either, because he has similar strikeout potential to Carrasco, probably similar upside. I think the distinction is we don't know that Syndergaard is able to handle a full 200 inning arsenal yet. And obviously there's some concerns after the amount of innings he threw in the playoffs last year, when we know Carrasco could do that. So Carrasco is a more solidified version of Syndergaard. I think that drops Syndergaard below Carrasco and joins him up with Sonny Gray, who doesn't have the upside of either of those two.
You have Carrasco ranked what, 17th?
17th.
And
yeah.
He's going 18th. So
yeah,
this is
no,
where he belongs.
Right, but that's the tier cutoff for me, right after Carrasco. So I'm just kind of reinforcing that point.
Right. Okay. So here we go. Let's go a little bit deeper. After the Carrasco, Gray, Lester, Syndergaard group, Syndergaard being the earliest drafted there, Johnny Cueto, Adam Wainwright, Cole Hamels, and Danny Salazar are off the board. And then we're really getting to a different tier after that. But we got Cueto, Wainwright, Hamels, and Salazar. We haven't said a word about Adam Wainwright. We barely talked about him at all, I feel like, in the preseason. So Cueto, Wainwright, Hamels, Salazar. Who's your favorite in that group, guys?
Hamels, easily for me. He is the safe guy in this group, because Wainwright, for me now, is sort of an unknown quantity now that he just doesn't strike guys out the way that he used to. Cueto, after the better part of last season, I don't have a lot of faith in him, even though I know his MRIs have checked out, but he just completely lost his command in the latter part of the season. And then Salazar, I think we do know who he is, but he's somebody who gives you a lot of upside with strikeouts, but a lot of risk with home runs.
I think it's probably pretty clear who I'm going to like, but since I like the 3-year averages more than I like the second half of last year, and that makes it Johnny Cueto.
Yeah, but don't you see you don't, because you talked about it yesterday, but there's an injury risk there with Cueto.
I don't think the fact that he had elbow stiffness in May of last year and then pitched the rest of the year
poorly. Horribly.
not the whole rest of the year poorly. He wasn't poor immediately after that.
Not immediately after, but the majority. Yeah.
And he wasn't bad. He wasn't terrible in the playoffs.
He wasn't the Cueto we were used to seeing, though.
Didn't get swings.
Well, the Cueto we were used to seeing needs to be ranked about 10 spots higher.
Yes.
So, okay. I mean, he's already been discounted for that.
He has.
You know who else has is Hamels. I love the idea of Hamels being the 23rd pitcher off the board. His velocity was actually better than ever in 2015, so that wasn't the problem. And he's had a history of bouncing back from bad ERA years. It's happened twice before. So he had 3.65 ERA last year. I would be happy with Hamels being my number one, honestly. You guys probably don't agree. Well, okay.
I don't think he's a number one the way the starting pitcher position stacks up this year.
I'll back off on that a little bit.
Yeah. Okay.
But high end number two. I like him.
Yeah. No, that's fair. I mean, certainly he's going to give you the innings of an ace. I just think there's a lot more ERA risk and not as much strikeout potential as most of the pitchers we talked about before.
Right. All right, so we're 24 deep now. Let's go to the next tier, so Salazar gets taken 84th. And then we go to the 90s, 93rd overall. We got Tyson Ross, Marcus Stroman, Garrett Richards, Michael Wacha, Carlos Martinez. Tyson Ross, Marcus Stroman, Garrett Richards, Michael Wacha, Carlos Martinez. Very, very interesting, intriguing group. What do you guys think?
Carmart is the class of this group. To me, I don't even understand how he winds up behind Waka.
I think it's a whip concern.
Yeah.
Cause he's going to kill you there where whip, Waka probably won't.
Waka probably won't hurt you in whip. Yeah. Martinez, we need him to take a step forward.
Right. If we think he's going to be, I agree. Yeah. He's the class.
Yeah. No, he's, you know, certainly everyone here is risky or flawed in some way. Ross is also a whip concern. He's an efficiency concern. Again, it's, you know, pretty much the strikeouts, and you can't necessarily count on a whole lot else from him. Stroman, I would guess one of the lower people in the industry.
You and me.
On him. Yeah, he too. Nice ground ball pitcher, who, you know, may or may not take that next step and help you in other ways. Mm. And Garrett Richards has, you know, had an uneven track record the last few years. So to me, Carmart's definitely got the most upside and the guy I'd be most interested in drafting.
I've got Carmart and Ross right in the same tier.
Okay. That almost sounds like you're not counting on Carlos Martinez to take a step forward.
No, I just think that Tyson Ross is undervalued. I mean, if we're hoping Carmart, what, strikes out 9.5, 10 batters and has an ERA under 3, mm-hmm. and that's what Ross has done if you combine his last two seasons.
Right. Okay.
You're kind of.
I mean, if we're just drafting Martinez based on what he did last year, though, this is the appropriate spot to take him.
Right. And I've got him at the top.
I'm saying
top
Ross
of this group
isn't going to be
Ross.
Any better than Martinez was last year. Ross has clear limitations because he's such an inefficient pitcher with a high walk rate. It limits his innings, which limits his win potential, and obviously
I think you could say all those same things about Carmart.
Influence. Yeah, I think that's the concern with Carmart, but there's still hope Carmart. Last year was his first year starting. I mean,
right.
I don't think we know exactly who Carlos Martinez is as a pitcher. And I assume you guys are, that's the reason you're excited about him, not because of his raw numbers, but because that's a good start of more you hope will come.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I agree.
But I guess I just don't totally agree with Ross can't be better than Carmart was last year because he was in 2014.
Tyson Ross in 2014.
Well, how much significantly better does he have to be?
Well, I guess I get what you're saying.
He struck out more batters, pitched more innings, had a lower ERA.
Yeah. My point with Tyson Ross is that he's going to hurt you in whip, guaranteed. Right? He's to me closer to Francisco Liriano than some of these pitchers we're talking about now.
I don't, like, for what reason?
Because they do the same things.
Okay. You think Liriano might have an ERA right around 3 this year?
I think he could, sure. I think whip's the bigger concern for both of them.
Agreed. I agree with that. And Carlos Martinez.
Yeah. But Carlos Martinez isn't established yet, and these other two are.
Well, let me just say one other thing about Martinez as he relates to Tyson Ross. I do think that I would bet, you know, like I give him, you know, a great chance to have more wins and probably a lot more wins than Tyson Ross and fewer losses. I think he'll have a much better record. And I also say that in his first 18 starts, Carlos Martinez had a 2.34 ERA and a strikeout per inning. And this is what I really like about him because opponents were hitting 2.30 against Martinez. I think it's an obvious fatigue situation where he just faltered, you know, in August. He had a 4.33 ERA in his last 11 starts and was getting hit around and just wasn't good at all. So I think you can just expect more from him as he now has the 179 2/3 under his belt. I expect a more complete season from Martinez, which is why Valentine's Day, he was my boy, player I love this year.
I think we're kind of overselling the whip concerns for Martinez, too. In the first half, when his control was actually much worse than later in the season, he had a 1.22 whip with a close-to-normal BABIP. So I don't think it's unreasonable to expect him to be in that same range this year.
Just to be fair to Tyson Ross, he had a 1.21 in 2014.
Heath made very good points.
I'm not trying to say bad things about Carlos Martinez. I want to make that clear. I just am higher on Tyson Ross than others. One last thing, since you talked about Carlos Martinez's second half, Adam, I feel like we need a list of players where the second half is very important to you and players where the second half can be
disregarded.
Sure. Okay. Well, I'll tell you, in terms of starting pitchers, it's very obvious to me that if you get a guy who has a big innings jump and then he falters down the stretch, I don't really care if he faltered down the stretch. I think there's a case to be made.
You don't think that could be a sign of he pitched too many innings? Because you've been asking us on several guys, this guy had an inning jump. Are you worried about it? Don't you think the fact that somebody falters on the stretch could be a sign that they pitched too many innings and maybe are a bigger injury concern this year?
But remember, he was a reliever in 2014, so it made sense for him to run out of gas in 2015. But as I keep referencing the article by Tom Verducci, where he highlighted, I think, five or six pitchers that he has concerns about this year, and Carlos Martinez was one of them, which really pissed me off because I love Carlos Martinez. So, yes, I do think that is a concern for Martinez. I'm hoping that it doesn't come to fruition. But a general rule, yes, you hear me talk about second half numbers. For a starting pitcher who has a big innings jump and struggles in the last month or two of the season, and I think you can blame it on fatigue, then I think the next year he is set up to have a better year. Does that make sense?
So players that pitch so much the year before that their arm wears down and they aren't as good are more likely to be good the next year.
Well, he's talking about players who are entering unfamiliar territory with innings.
Right. Which is the
every young pitcher has to do at some point. You're not able to pitch as many innings in the minors as you're expected to in the majors.
Right.
And I totally agree with his philosophy.
Okay.
Thank you, Scott, for goodness sake. All right. Next up, we have Jordan Zimmermann, Masahiro Tanaka, Francisco Liriano, Justin Verlander. Wow. We have a big tier here. All right, I'm going to read them again. Zimmermann, Tanaka, Liriano. It's actually just those three. And then there's like a 20-spot drop in ADP. So Zimmermann, Tanaka, Liriano. How do those guys compare to Richard, Stroman, Ross, Waka, Martinez?
Not favorably. Tanaka just scares me. I probably should be dropping him down in my rankings from currently 27th because when the rubber meets the road in these drafts, I look elsewhere in the tier. I just really worried that, slight tear is going to become a bigger tear, or there's going to be some kind of health issue for Tanaka. And then Zimmermann, I think, will probably bounce back, but, his upside doesn't put him in the same level as a Carmart or a Stroman or a Tyson Ross. And then Liriano, we've talked about, I mean, great for the strikeouts, but, definitely a whip concern for him and innings concern.
I would like to lower Tyson Ross into this group. But I disagree with what Al was saying about Tanaka. I feel like the script is flipped from a year ago. I mean, he held up last year much better than I ever expected. And had some issues with the home runs, obviously. But from what I've read, it had to do with pitch selection and how he was a little hesitant to use some pitches that he would have otherwise used in normal situations and that he's vowed not to be that way anymore. So we'll see if that actually happens. But if that explanation holds up, then I think he is by far the most likely of this group to have an ace caliber season. I actually think he's the upside pick of this group, not the downside pick, and I find myself drafting him a lot.
I agree that he's the upside pick. I agree with Al that his risk scares me a lot. So I think both points are valid. Mm-hmm. I also think that Francisco Liriano has never had a season as good as Tyson Ross's 2014.
So
not far off.
Yeah, there was one with the Twins where I think he may have been a little better, but probably not significantly better.
Yeah, Liriano.
3.62 ERA that year. Okay. Then I'll concede the point.
Do you guys want to guess where Liriano finished? He threw 186 and two-thirds innings. Where do you think he finished among starting pitchers in points leagues and Roto? With only a 1.21 whip, but where do you think he finished?
I'm going to guess 30th in points, and I'll say 24th in Roto.
Pretty good. 23rd in Roto, but actually 22nd in points because he went 12-7.
Shocking.
I think he's a little underrated.
Yeah. Well, but, I obviously agree. I think last year was kind of the year he and Tyson Ross finally met at about the same point. Ross had 10 more innings, slightly lower ERA.
But
Liriano had
which
a
direction?
Slightly lower whip and a better strikeout rate. What was that, Heath?
But Liriano is going to be 33 years old during the season. Okay. Tyson Ross is still in his prime.
Yeah, I think 33 is not especially.
I think if I presented all these facts without names and you hadn't already decided on Tyson Ross, that you would like him considerably more than you would Francisco Liriano.
Wait a week. We'll forget about this discussion.
just compare their numbers last year. They were the same pitcher.
Last year. You're just disregarding everything the previous.
No, Keith, you're just making way too much out of 2014 and completely disregarding 2015.
He wasn't bad in 2015.
But he wasn't nearly as good as he was in 2014. So how do we know who he is?
And I'd argue that 2014 wasn't that great either. I mean, it was better than last year, but the hype with Tyson Ross last year, this time last year, I feel like was about where the hype is for Carlos Martinez now. We saw the strides he had made from one season to the next and said, oh, this guy's on the verge of becoming an ace. And instead of doing that, he took a step back.
He didn't.
He did.
What's better? I'm not going to tell you which year is which. 195 innings, 8.9 strikeouts per nine, and a 3.24 whip. Or 196 innings, 9.7 strikeouts per nine, and a 2.98 whip. Or FIP, I'm sorry, FIP.
Well, I know because I'm looking at it.
2015 was better. Peripheral.
All right, listen.
You assess a guy totally on his FIP, which is a theoretical stat, but I think most people assess him on how he did for their fantasy
strikeouts
teams.
Strikeouts per
and
nine.
Last I checked, no fantasy league counts FIP, Heath.
No, some do, actually.
Well, they're shunning because it's a theoretical stat. It has absolutely no bearing on what happens on the field.
Replace wins with FIP, and you're doing a much better job of measuring who's a good pitcher.
Well, here's what scares me.
FIP is completely imaginary. It has no meaning to anything.
Okay, strikeouts per nine. He also struck out almost a batter more per nine last year.
But he walked half a batter more. That's true. That's what scares me about Tyson Ross. Now, the whip inflation, some of that was BABIP related, and I can't find anything. Maybe it was a defensive thing. I should probably look into that.
The Padres had a terrible defense and probably will again.
The outfield shouldn't have affected Ross because he's such a good ground ball pitcher. But anyhow, it's those walks that just really frighten me because, even with the strikeouts, even if he survives ERA-wise, he went more than six innings, I think, nine times out of 33 last year.
And still threw 10 more innings in the
lineup. Guys, I got to jump in here. Let me jump in.
Okay.
We got about 20 minutes left and we're 30 pitchers in. I want to get at least 60 pitchers in. So enough about Tyson Ross. You made your case. Let's get going. The next group is 20 picks later almost. And it's Justin Verlander, who I think a lot of us probably feel should be ahead of some of the guys in front. Steven Matz, Jeff Samardzija, Yu Darvish. Big starting pitcher run here. So I'll go five at a time. Verlander, Steven Matz, Samardzija, Yu Darvish, Raisel Iglesias, 37th overall.
Well, you know, I've got Verlander ranked well ahead of the rest of these guys, and I understand the risk there. But what he did for I think it was about 14 starts was just such a radical departure from what he had been doing, and so much more reminiscent of what he did in his prime. That I have to separate him from guys like Matz and Samardzija and Darvish.
There is some risk with Verlander, but to me,
it's a 5-year journey
it
here
in
for
comparison
Scott.
To the risk for Jeff Samardzija, who I actually liked as a sleeper coming into draft season, but I had no idea he'd be getting drafted as if last year never happened, which seems to be the case.
Yeah,
that I'm 35th starting pitcher. I'm not really sure he was ranked much higher than that going into last year, coming off by far the best season of his career. He may have been like 29th or something instead of 35th, but it was close. That's just.
Do you think a lot of it's him going back to the National League?
And specifically to AT&T Park, because every time I make an argument against Samardzija, that's the reply I get.
Well, yeah, I mean, those are reasons to be encouraged. Those are reasons to think he could have a bounce back season. But to draft him as if it's already happened is just foolish to me. There's so many other good pitchers out there.
I don't like Verlander at all. I like him a lot more than Samardzija.
What about Matz? Verlander or Matz? Who do you guys prefer?
I'll still go Verlander, though.
I've got Matz.
I'm with Al on this, though. Okay. I do like Matz. I mean, Matz is someone I take over Samardzija for sure.
All right, Raisel Iglesias, we talked about yesterday. We like him as a sleeper, but 37th overall.
He's not a sleeper anymore.
Not a sleeper. All right, next group, James Shields, Michael Pineda, Jose Quintana, Shelby Miller, and John Lackey. James Shields, Michael Pineda, Jose Quintana, Shelby Miller, and John Lackey.
I think everybody is ranked too highly here except for Shields. And Shields is right about where he belongs.
I think Quintana is maybe only a little high there. Otherwise, I agree. Pineda scares me maybe even more than Tanaka does. Lackey had the year of his life last year. Miller is on my bust list.
But see, we're kind of leaving the point where there's any measure of provenness among starting pitchers. If they are proven, it's guys like Quintana and Lackey who are lackluster. So I think it's an appropriate time for Shelby Miller myself. I understand why you'd have him as a bust, but just, you know, gambling on the extreme upside that he's still purported to have and is shown in flashes. I think this is about the right time to do that.
Okay. So, all right, we can move past this tier then. Let's go to Lance McCullers, Hisashi Iwakuma, Colin McHugh, Drew Smyly, man. The more I do the research, the more I like Drew Smyly. And then Scott Kazmir. So McCullers, Iwakuma, Colin McHugh, Drew Smyly, Scott Kazmir. I like this group of five probably more than the previous group of five.
I'd agree with that too. Just seems odd to me to have Smyly and Kazmir back to back because I really have them in very different tiers. Like you said, at this point in the draft, I think Smyly is great. I think he's pretty underrated. Mm-hmm. And Kazmir really ended last year with a whimper. And there's just always the concern in the back of my mind that he can't stay healthy.
It's been a couple years in a row where he's ended it with a whimper, I feel like. Yep. And I mean, for as much as we've harped on some pitchers, endurance and ability to go a certain number of innings this year, since his return, in 2013, where Scott Kazmir re-entered the fold in fantasy, he has consistently fallen off around the 150, 160 inning mark. He's managed to get to 190, 180, but it's always been ugly those last 30, 40 innings.
So,
yeah. At this point, though, I don't know that I hate taking him here because he does get to go to the National League, which helps. He's going to win more games because he's going to be on a good team. And if he's only good for the first three-fourths of the season, I'll have somebody else to put in a spot by the time he turns into a pumpkin.
Yeah, no, it's not a bad point. I want to read all 10 names now, and I want you guys to tell me who has the best chance to break out and really like win you a fantasy league. I think there are several names that could come up. So Shields, Pineda, Quintana, Shelby Miller, Lackey, McCullers, Iwakuma, Colin McHugh, Smyly, Kazmir.
I will go with James Shields. Just on the premise that what if his strikeout rate doesn't regress next year, but he stops giving up the most home runs in the majors?
Okay.
I'll say Iwakuma because my only concern with him is health.
Yeah.
He was really good for most of last season. And guys like McCullers and Smyly, you know, might take that extra step forward and be better than Iwakuma, but in terms of kind of making the percentage play of who I think could really make you a better team, I would say Iwakuma.
And I go Iwakuma as well, but Shields is second and McCullers is third. So I think those are the three who stand out as being misplaced among this 10.
We talked about how many innings, I've argued about how many innings Verlander's thrown. And we've talked about how many innings Felix has thrown. Have we ever really considered how many innings Iwakuma has thrown?
I don't think ever in the history of this podcast.
Like, because it's not very many here.
Yeah.
But he did come from Japan where they tend to abuse their pitchers regularly.
Mm-hmm.
And he's 34 years old. And he's struggled with injuries the last couple of years.
Well, he's the 44th pitcher off the board, Heath. Does that sound too early for you on Iwakuma?
I don't know that it sounds too early. I just don't. Like, I feel like it's not necessarily a steal either.
Okay.
Just because I am hopeful that very shortly I'm going to have a number that I can say this is how many innings he's thrown, but it's not looking promising. There we go. I've got it. Almost. he's thrown a bunch of innings.
Oh, okay.
Oh, thank you.
Lots.
Thanks for the clarification.
And lots. of innings.
Next group, guys. Next group.
All totaled 2,200, which I think is right around Felix.
Julio
Teheran. That's
not
counting Japanese minors or high school, anything before age 20.
Julio Teheran is next. Luis Severino, Yordano Ventura, Jake Odorizzi, and Gio Gonzalez. We are into the 50s. 48 is Julio Teheran, 49 Severino, 50 Ventura, Odorizzi, and Gio Gonzalez. Anybody stand out as good or bad value here?
Yeah. Teheran and Severino and Ventura, all three, I think, have much higher upside than a bunch of the pitchers we've sped past here, guys like McHugh and Lackey and Quintana. I would put them all in a higher tier. And did you mention Gio Gonzalez?
He was the last one I mentioned, yeah.
Okay. I don't like him as much as these other players because obviously he showed the extent of his downside last year. But you want to talk about a guy who had bad luck. His BABIP last year was the highest of any pitcher. And obviously that had a huge impact on his whip, which was the main stat that made him a bad fantasy option. You look at his other peripherals, strikeout rate, walk rate. It was all the same. I think Gio Gonzalez makes a good case for a bounce back season. I don't think the upside is any higher than that Francisco Liriano, Tyson Ross group we've mentioned a few times, but I think it's a lot higher than this ranking gives him credit for.
They were not in the same group.
Okay.
Allie, you're supposed to talk about Luis Severino because you're the highest in the industry on him.
He's on my list for the next update, which hopefully I'll get to today to drop him because, again, in drafts, I'm just not acting in accordance with that.
You don't like the
ranking.
Yankees this year?
No.
At all?
No. Yeah, the rotation really is pretty terrifying, I think.
Wait a second. It's terrifying?
Yeah.
It's got the most possible outcomes. They could have one of the best rotations in baseball or one of the worst rotations in baseball.
Well, and I would, you know, if I were a fan, which, as you know, I'm definitely not.
Right.
It would really worry me, you know, because I guess I think we tend to be more pessimistic with the teams we root for and to see how much risk is. I mean, every single guy in that rotation is a risk. I mean, even Eovaldi with some injury concern.
I agree, but I do think that we kind of skipped over him. I know Scott thinks Michael Pineda is going to have Tommy John surgery. I think there's a lot of upside with Pineda, and he wasn't mentioned. We couldn't mention everyone, but I think
I got burned last year.
Yeah,
because I really thought that was going to be the year that he put it together and stayed healthy, and it just didn't go well.
Do you think the upside's all that much better than Luis Severino, who's going? He's going 10 pitchers later.
I do, because I think they said Severino can pitch 200 innings this year. I do. I don't really have a great reason for it. Just I have a hard time seeing Severino having a great year. I don't think I'm going to be drafting him unless I could see me drafting him if he's the 50th pitcher off the board. I was actually surprised. I thought he'd be a little higher.
Real quick here. We haven't talked about Jake Odorizzi. I don't get the love for him this year so far.
Yeah.
Last year, I understand he brought the ERA way down, but stranded a lot of runners, and everything else was really pretty meh.
And got away with a low home run rate for a while. I think it started to catch up to him towards the end, but he's one of the more extreme fly ball pitchers in baseball.
I mean, he moderated that last year, but you know, it wasn't enough to offset the drop in the strikeouts.
Exactly. There wasn't enough gains to make up for the losses, and I trust the gains.
Okay,
I'm sorry, and I don't trust the gains as much as the losses.
Here's hopefully what we're going to do, just so everybody knows, making a little on-air audible. We're going to talk about like really late-round guys that are after the top 60 that you like probably tomorrow, but we'll continue ADP here, and we'll just finish off starting pitcher tomorrow, as we also do a mailbag. You can email us at fantasybaseball@cbsi.com, and we'll catch you up on some of the latest news as well. But we do have more pitchers to talk about after Gio Gonzalez, who's 52nd off the board. Let's just go to 60 here. We'll do eight pitchers. Taijuan Walker. Yesterday we had a big debate about him, but we all agreed if 53rd off the board, you know, behind all these other, way behind McCullers and Severino, it doesn't really make sense. So Taijuan Walker, underdrafted. Carlos Rodon is next. You talk about a whip killer. Mike Fiers, Jaime Garcia, Wei-Yin Chen now on the Marlins. Patrick Corbin. I'm excited about him. 58th overall. Kenta Maeda for the Dodgers and Kyle Hendricks, who Al identified as a late round sleeper. There's your top 60. Taiwan Walker, Carlos Rodon, Mike Fiers, Jaime Garcia, Wei-Yin Chen, Patrick Corbin, Kenta Maeda, and Kyle Hendricks. How crazy am I to say that Patrick Corbin is my favorite in that group?
Not crazy at all.
Oh, good.
He seems really underrated.
I think he's my highest rated in that group.
Over Walker? Really?
No. Besides Walker. We'd already talked
about Carlos Rodon?
Nope, not him either.
Okay. Yeah. No, Carlos Rodon, it wasn't as dramatic as Taiwan Walker, who went from being one of the worst walk pitchers to one of the best last year. But Carlos Rodon looked like he couldn't have a whip below 1.5. And then all of a sudden, once August came, it's not like he became a good control pitcher, but he became one who could certainly stick around in the majors, had Tyson Ross-like control, and a 1.81 ERA over his final 8 starts. So,
we know which call on this one goes in the second half, matters or doesn't matter. Argument.
I think it matters a lot more for a young pitcher who hasn't been good yet, but we all expect him to be good eventually.
Unless he's thrown too many innings and he's just wearing it.
Heath,
tight.
You know, okay, listen. Did you, 2 years ago, I wonder, what did you think about Brian Dozier? Did you completely ignore what he did in the second half of 2013? Like, do these things not even matter to you? It's like a sample size cannot possibly be big enough for you. It has to be 3 years long. And I'm going to get, like, I don't want bad iTunes comments. Adam and Heath don't get along. So you have to stop doing this to us, but you're like picking on us for caring about these smaller sample sizes. But we're trying to look for positives here. Just be positive. Be happy for once.
I was trying to be positive about Tyson Ross and nobody would let me.
It's not such a bad thing to look at some, like you can look at game logs and be like, wow, those were some really dominant starts. Two of the last 3 starts for Carlos Rodon.
I do that all the time.
7 innings, 1 run, 1 walk.
I love looking at those things. I just don't try to make them predictive.
Fine. So I understand the difference in philosophy there, but let's not harp on it. Some of us care about it, some of us don't, and we're going to leave it at that.
So never to be mentioned again.
I think it's unproductive for us to you know, harp on this. Some of us care about it, some of us don't. You listeners can make the judgments that you want. But you know, Scott and I seem to buy into it more than Alan Heath. I think you make it out to be like we buy into it like it's the only thing that matters, it's the only thing that's important, and all we're doing is putting it as part of the bigger picture.
No, I was just trying to highlight when sometimes the second half stuff is important to you and sometimes it's not.
And I gave a perfectly reasonable explanation that Scott agreed with. So yeah. Scott and I are one team. I'm not quite sure where Al is because Al is too nice to interject.
I think you characterized it right. I definitely think I'm not as adamant about it as Heath is, but definitely I think not as flexible maybe as you and Scott are on it.
Okay. So, any final thoughts, guys? We're 60 pitchers deep here and we can finish up tomorrow.
I just really enjoy doing the podcast with you. Please don't pitch
me. Look, I do too. And I don't want people to think that we don't like each other because we do, but some of my favorite people in the world I get into big arguments with. So, you know, this is the kind of stuff happens.
I'm one of your favorite people in the world?
I don't know about that. If I didn't like you, I wouldn't argue with you. I wouldn't even care. But obviously, like, I feel comfortable enough to go back and forth with Heath about this stuff. So anyway, homework assignment for whoever's on the podcast tomorrow. Just come up with a few names of, after the top 60 pitchers that you think are being underdrafted or overdrafted. Guys you either really don't like or really do like. And we will talk about it tomorrow as part of a bigger show. So, kumbaya, fellas. Have a great day.
Namaste.
All right. For Heath Cummings, Al Melchior, and Scott White, I'm Adam Azer. This is Fantasy Baseball Today.